This is Dori Smith for Regime Change Radio, a half-hour series on the importance of voting to bring about regime change in America. This report on Iraq was taped Good Friday, 2004. Independent journalist Dar Jamail has been on this program before, reporting from Iraq, a U.S. journalist from Anchorage. He will be covering Iraq for New Standard News this time, and you can read his articles online at newstandardnews.net. Dar Jamail spent the past winter in Iraq and came home for a brief U.S. tour. He returned to the war zone even as U.S. 911 Commission hearings were continuing and events in Iraq breaking down into chaos. Dar Jamail takes a closer look at the lives of average Iraqis impacted by the U.S. military presence in their country since the 2003 invasion. You will find his recent reports on Bechtel for Public Citizen and a pamphlet of his work from Iraq by logging on to newstandardnews.net. A troop rotation that began last February left citizens in Iraq more vulnerable. U.S. forces shipped out despite difficulties securing cities, leaving only lightly trained Iraqi recruits to police largely populated areas. The uprising that began last Wednesday has resulted in heavy casualties, and Jamail says it feels like the real war for Iraq has begun.
Thanks, Dori. I am in Baghdad. I'm actually in central Baghdad over in the Karada district, which is, we feel like we're in a bit of a donut hole because there's fighting and violence going on all over Baghdad right now, and the U.S. has even got Bradley sitting around Furta Square right down the street where the infamous toppling of the Saddam statue was, and they've imposed a curfew on that particular area for fear of bombings. So we're just right down the street from that, but that should give you a bit of an idea where I am. I'm actually on top of my apartment looking over towards the Sheraton Hotel right now.
I was given to understand that some of al-Sadr's people were also in that square, and we heard a little bit about that on Democracy Now! The other day. Do you know anything about what's happening with that organization? And tell me what you can about how much it actually represents the Iraqis now.
Well, it's a very interesting situation because while the majority of the Shia follow Sistani and not the radical cleric Muqtada Sadr, his resistance, although it's violent and many people don't adhere to his beliefs, the simple fact that he has taken action against the occupation and in support of what's going on in Fallujah as well, more and more of Sistani's followers are starting to be drawn over to that side simply because they're getting more tired of they're growing weary of just sitting around and having non-action on their part. Meanwhile, they're watching Iraqis in Fallujah being killed by the hundreds, and that's why the resistance is continuing to grow against the Americans.
We did hear first thing this morning on the U.S. wire services that the United States was going to hold off and try some form of negotiated process. Tell me, did you hear about that, and how did it fall apart?
I did hear about that, and from what I can tell, it was just rhetoric. The bargaining, basically, that happened was that some members of the Iraqi Governing Council, along with the CPA, who, of course, the Iraqi Governing Council is 100% U.S. appointed, but they apparently offered a deal to Sadr to basically guaranteeing him safety and dignity if he turned himself in. So that was basically the beginning and the end of those negotiations because there's no way that Sadr is going to turn himself in, particularly now when he's in Najaf, the same city where Sistani is, and the U.S. forces will not enter that for at least four more days. So, no, any negotiations are just rhetoric at this point.
Talk a little bit more about that, Dar Jamail, how the strategy is looking to you. I mean, from both perspectives, if you can understand, just in terms of the country itself and where these locations are.
Well, Najaf is the main, it's the main holy city. It is a bit south of Baghdad, southwest. And it's primarily it would be the main Shia stronghold, you could say, just to give you a general idea. As far as the strategy, Muqtada Sadr's basically just declared his own intifada against the Americans, and he's trying to paint it like it's an entire Shia intifada against the Americans, which is simply not the case, although that is what Sadr hopes will occur, that this will just continue to spread. It is spreading daily. More and more people are fighting against the Americans. They've lost complete control of Kut. They had to retake Kut, Najaf, Karbala. There's fighting going on there now. In countless other cities around Iraq right now, there's fighting. So that strategy, it seems to be working, but just because we see the ongoing heavy fighting and that is spread throughout Iraq. Meanwhile, the U.S. military is just launching heavier and heavier attacks against, for example, Fallujah, which is continuing to infuriate Iraqis. These images of dead bodies of women, children, elderly, flashing across all the Arab networks here is just infuriating everyone. And so, as I said before, this is what is causing Sadr's movement, as militant and as radical as he is, it is drawing more people onto his side to fight against the Americans.
In your dispatches home, and you're writing now to newstandardnews.net, people can read your dispatches home and your articles there. Dar Jamail, in your latest material, you have talked about an anxiety that stems from attacks on demonstrators and situations where people were pushed to the absolute breaking point. And you also have reported on some of what the Iraqi people are steeling themselves for as they collect blood and do other things that would indicate they see almost like a second U.S. invasion.
That's exactly what it feels like today, Dori. It's really amazing. The irony of the whole thing was, if you remember back to the U.S. invasion, their biggest fear was street-to-street guerrilla fighting kind of war in Baghdad. But here we are exactly 1 year later today of the fall of Baghdad, and they have street-to-street fighting now in house-to-house fighting in separate parts throughout Baghdad. Even right now, there's fighting going on over in Adamiya, which broke out about an hour and a half ago. So it's occurring in parts of Baghdad. The great irony is that now it's occurring in countless other cities throughout Iraq, Fallujah, of course, being the main one. So their worst nightmares have began to materialize, albeit a year late.
It does seem as if people on all sides of the political aisle now are talking about chaos in Iraq. This is something altogether new in America. But the idea of what to do about it is frightening. In many cases, there are calls for a much larger military presence as this problem that really arises from a troop rotation back in February continues to escalate. Talk about that problem that started back in February, Dar Jamail, as it looks to you. I mean, did we lose control? Did we make horrible mistakes? What do you think?
Well, we absolutely have made one horrible mistake after another. Closing Sadr's Al-Hazza newspaper and then announcing that they were going to arrest him within, like, barely a week later was absolutely an abominable mistake. And I would be willing to bet that the people who made those calls wish they had done something different. But they have made one huge blunder after the next. Even in Fallujah for today, for example, Ambassador Brimmer came out at noon and said that there was a ceasefire in the works, that they were going to call a unilateral ceasefire in Fallujah. And minutes later, the military was dropping bombs in the city of Fallujah, wounding at least over 50 Fallujah residents. And then General Kimmett at the same time was speaking out saying, no, we never called a ceasefire at all. So obviously there's some major communication problems. There's certainly chaos in Iraq, and obviously a lot of it is within the CPA itself. To say that there was control here and it has just broken into chaos, I think is really a misnomer, because it's been chaotic the entire time since the occupation. Any idea of control that the Americans may have thought that they had here is just rhetoric and illusion. And what we're seeing now is all that chaos is turning into violence instead. It's a year later. People are disgruntled. They're There's still skyrocketing unemployment. The economic situation's in shambles. And now there is this growing intifada against the Americans. And it must be their worst nightmare come true over there in the CPA, because they are doing the ongoing troop rotations, but they were trying to downsize the military here to between 105 and 110,000 troops. They just announced they're going to be keeping that up to 135,000 troops. People who have been here a long time, who are preparing to go home, they're being informed now they're going to have to stay longer to sit this out, since they have more experience to help get them through this, is what they're saying. But getting them through this, that's the big question, because it's only increasing and it's only growing here. The fighting is only getting more intense and spreading to more areas. So it looks like they're in this for the long haul, and it's starting to look more and more like this is the real war. The invasion a year ago, compared to this, is starting to pale by comparison. Even in Kut, they were launching attacks in Kut to try to retake the city that were as heavy as they were even during the initial invasion. The troops are under attack everywhere, all over Iraq, even throughout various parts of Baghdad. So it's basically a full-on war again, but we keep calling it an occupation.
Well, as it stands now, Dar Jamail, you are in the war zone. As an independent journalist, we don't any longer have the mainstream press over there in large numbers. As far as I know, maybe I'm wrong about that. After all, we don't really know what is being done on a day-to-day level here and out of the Pentagon. They may well have deployed a whole new set of embedded reporters. But before we talk about the reporting on this war, let's talk a little bit more about what you're seeing and what you know, because you had spoken before you left about the possibility that foreign fighters were entering this war zone and about lax security at the borders. Explain your view on that as it is from Baghdad, Iraq today, and this is Good Friday. We're talking 4/9/04.
Right. When I first came to Iraq, when I was here last December and January, the border was wide open. Not a U.S. soldier on either side of the border going in or coming out of Iraq. Everyone I spoke with coming in and leaving say the same thing. Yep, no soldiers. It's still wide open. Come through the border. There were literally no searches on your person, your luggage, or your vehicle. This time when I came through, there were actually four U.S. soldiers at the Iraqi border. They were basically standing off to the side smoking cigarettes when we went through. Again, I wasn't searched. Our car wasn't searched, and we just rolled right on through. I was through the border in less than 30 minutes this time, and this time there were soldiers. So technically there are some soldiers at the border, but in reality, the security situation at the border, is at least with Jordan, is still wide open, the main thoroughfare from Jordan. So foreign fighters, arms, money, anything else they need coming through, it's obviously not having not being impeded by the U.S. military.
Do you think that there's any possibility that America will be successful at trying to find a new coalition to bring into this war zone now that things have gotten so intense there?
I think any country in its right mind would never send troops here, because even we see what is occurring with the Japanese situation, with the three Japanese who are being held captive, and if the Japanese don't pull their troops out in a day and a half, they're going to burn them alive, Sadr's militia has said. So that is going on. We see what has occurred with Spain. The Italians are under attack, Polish, Hungarians, Ukrainians, everyone here is under attack, and several of those other countries are talking more. There's reverberations going all the way back to each country's government, and now they're all talking very heatedly about getting their troops out, letting them finish possibly the current rotation that they're in, and then pulling them out. So, and I haven't heard anything else about any countries willing to send either new troops in or more troops at this time. And I think anyone that would be out of their mind.
Dar Jamail, there was a press report of a U.S. convoy hit that was en route to Fallujah. Have you heard about that? And can you talk a little bit more, too, about whether or not America has been able to retain whatever Iraqi people it had recruited as either police or fighters at this time?
The The convoy that was hit going to Fallujah, I did hear about that. There were reports it was heavily attacked, and there were 9 U.S. casualties from the reports that I heard. And there was actually some gunfire a little ways off. Can you repeat the second part of that question?
Tell me, if you can, whether or not America did successfully recruit any Iraqis to fight alongside U.S. forces in the securing of Fallujah or other cities.
That is a very tricky question. They have been deploying Iraqi civil defense forces, and there is an Iraqi army that they've been trying to form, although it's not ready yet. I have seen Iraqi soldiers around guarding various U.S. areas, like out in front of the CPA, for example, and even in front of several of the U.S. bases, like over in Adamiya and over near Sadr City. So they are there. I don't know particularly whether they've been deployed to go into Fallujah. I would be very surprised if that were the case, because even down south in all of these cities that are under siege by Muqtada Sadr's militia, the Iraqi police there have basically just stayed at home. They won't fight. They don't want to get involved. They fear for their lives. They know if they fight against their countrymen that they and their families will then be targeted. What instances I have heard of Iraqis joining in with the U.S. to fight against the Intifada, to fight against the resistance, have been few. They do join the U.S. They pause before they start going out with the U.S. to pull the head mask over. They wear full coverage face masks so that people can't see who they are and then go take retribution upon their families.
You wrote a piece, Blood Bags of Solidarity, posted April 8th, 2004, from Iraq, and you talked about Qadamiya. Describe that story for listeners, and also do tell them where they can go online to read it themselves.
Sure. The story is basically, I had spent the day going over to Qadamiya. I first went to, it was prior to Qadamiya. It was Sadr City and Shuala, where a couple of days before there had been fierce fighting against the U.S. Several soldiers had died and many. And I went to the offices there, both offices in each location for Muqtada Sadr, and talked to his spokesman in each one. And they basically explained the situations where in each instance there was a demonstration. It was nonviolent. The U.S. tried to break up, but not disperse, and so they opened fire and began killing demonstrators, and that's when the real fighting broke out. And that was the side, that was the story in each location. And when I was coming back from that story, I drove through Adamiya, which is a very strong Sunni, Baathist, pro-Saddam area. And I drove right by the main mosque there, the Abu Hanifa Mosque, and there were thousands of people standing around outside, and there was a huge food drive I could see. There were trucks being loaded with huge bags of potatoes and rice and other basic foodstuffs, cans of oil. And then there was a huge horde of people crowding into the mosque to donate blood. They knew how many people were being killed in Mudin and Fallujah, and so they knew it was imperative to get blood up there. And so there were doctors running in with literally huge bags, bags carrying smaller blood bags into the mosque. It was an extremely intense situation. I went in with my interpreter, and of course I didn't let them know I was an American, and people were chanting Allah is God over and over, and it was echoing through the mosque, and just hundreds of people crammed into this small area. It was an amazing scene, and they were passionately in support of the people of Fallujah. And then after the chanting, they all basically ran and were fighting over each other to get to the blood bags, because this is their form of resistance. They say, we don't have to have a violent intifada, but this is our other way of having an intifada. We can give blood, money, food, and other supplies to our countrymen up in Fallujah, and that's exactly what they were doing. There were rings of people sitting around donating their blood, pumping their arms furiously to fill the blood bags to send up to Fallujah. It was really an amazing thing. The other very interesting part of the situation was all the people that I spoke with said, this is not just for Sunni. This is for all Iraqis who are fighting against the Americans. even our brothers over in Sadr City, which is predominantly Shia, even over in Thawra, which is also predominantly Shia. And it wasn't limited only for that. And I asked them specifically, so this is for Shia and Sunni alike. You're together in this. And everyone there said, yes, we are together. We are united in fighting the Americans. And while I don't believe that to be 100% true, I there are definitely still some serious rifts between the two groups. But nevertheless, more and more, that is the truth, that there have been reports. I actually know some people personally that reported they were over in Adamiya, and there are Sunni and Shia literally fighting shoulder to shoulder against the Americans. And that's happening not just in Adamiya, but it's beginning to happen all over Baghdad now. As far as that story, I am writing for, it's being posted on a website called www.newstandardnews.net. So if you wanted to read the whole story, that's where you could check it out.
Yes, I do recommend that listeners log on to the internet to read Dar Jamail's reports. And it's just an amazing thing you're doing, Dar. Talk a little bit again about why you're there, and explain what you would say to a community of listeners in a packed hall, town hall in America today, about how to view events in Iraq, how to understand this chaotic process that started with an invasion to topple Hussein, we said would be met with flowers and wine and waves of happy Iraqis, that turned into fears of civil war, that then escalated into a full-scale uprising.
Well, the thing to remember is that this entire war has been based on lies from the beginning. The whole reasons that the U.S. government, the Bush administration, used to justify invading Iraq, all of them, I mean, that's a given at this point. It's obvious to any that this war was fought, was waged under false pretenses. There was no reason for us to invade Iraq like we did. And it's gone that way on. It's been one big lie, and now this whole situation is I think we're seeing the results of that. The other part of the problem has been, for the most part, not 100%. There's been some folks that have been doing a good job, but overall, the mainstream media in the U.S. has just failed to report what is really going on in the ground of Iraq. So while this might look like a drastic turn of events in Iraq, the thing now, that's just simply not true. It's turned extremely violent and widespread, but the chaos and the unrest and the growing fury against the Americans has been here literally since the fall of Baghdad. So what we're seeing is it's now that it's violent, it's making the front page, but this is the sort of thing that myself and other independent journalists here have been reporting all along through the occupation is, hey, we're sitting on a time bomb. It's one little thing. We don't know what it's going to be, but one little thing is going to set this place off, and it's going to go any time. And now we're seeing that happen, and it's only going to continue to grow worse. So I encourage people to get their news from various sources, not just the mainstream media, to use the Internet. Go read other countries' main newspapers, Al Jazeera's English site. BBC even does a better job of covering it than the majority of U.S. channels. So get separate sources than only corporate media in the U.S. and definitely question the source and, you know, where is this, who's paying them to broadcast this news, et cetera, because it's a very difficult time. And that are giving people in America the news about the occupation, those are the same channels that were used by the Bush administration to sell this war to begin with.
Dar, I understand you have been writing, too, about some of the corporate goings-on in Iraq, the contracts, the failures at reconstruction. Talk a little bit about that and your other interests in this war as you're going to be writing from Iraq.
Well, when I came back this time, I had finished my last trip by working on a report with a group out of Washington, D.C. called Public Citizen. I did the on-the-ground reporting for a report on the water portion of Bechtel's contract in Iraq and basically how they weren't fulfilling their contract in several instances. And there were just blatant violations of their own contract in the cities of Najaf, Diwaniya, and Hilla. And in each place, I went to the water treatment plant spoke with either the head or assistant engineer, I'm sorry, the head or the assistant water treatment manager or the head engineer at each plant, and each one of them said Bechtel has either done nothing here or they maybe one of their subcontractors has come by, put some paint on some buildings, maybe replaced a couple of the filters, but none of the work they had done had actually increased any of the potable water supply. So this facade of that there's been very little. Now there is a little bit rebuilding I see going on in Baghdad, but it's all being done by Iraqis, basically picking themselves by their own bootstraps. So all of that money and all of these contracts and all of this rhetoric about rebuilding Iraq and playing out. And in fact, I wanted to focus more on that this trip. It seems like a war's gotten in the way of that. So this is obviously taking up more of the reporting at the moment, and but most likely will continue to do so. So I don't know how much. And plus, it's made travel outside of Baghdad extremely dangerous. Journalists are being captured, two Americans and either four or six Italians, even just today, just outside of Baghdad. So I'm going to be holding off on investigating into that stuff too much deeper, at least for the time being.
Well, Dar Jamail, you were cutting out just a little bit there, talking about the reconstruction contract shortcomings of Bechtel and Halliburton and other companies tied in with this administration. As you know, the administration is going through a sort of trial here with Condoleezza Rice testifying yesterday about her role in the securing of America after 9/11 and how it was impacted by their intentions to invade Iraq. Please do stand by to hear from us again. We really look forward to all of your coverage of Iraq and rely on you to tell us what's going on in this troubled, troubled part of the world. Dar Jamail reporting from Iraq on Good Friday.
Thanks very much, Dori.
Dar Jamail is a freelance journalist from Anchorage, Alaska, covering Iraq for New Standard News, an online news service available at www.newstandardnews.net. I'm Dori Smith for Regime Change Radio. This program was produced in the studios of listener-supported WHUS Doors, Radio for the People at the University of Connecticut. For further information, write to me at rcrradio@aol.com. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or the University of Connecticut.